Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:11 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is March 13th. And stock markets were in generally positive territory today, but they didn't quite hold on to all of the advance. There is still some reticence among investors to push the S&P through to new recovery highs. I think everyone would much prefer someone else to do it first. And the market has been up strongly for the last four consecutive days. So we may see some pause, but until we really see that this index is pushing successfully above the highs posted in October, November, and December, we won't really have clear confirmation of a return to medium-term demand dominance. It's really quite, I think, expected that we should have some pause and consolidation around this area, and we've had a very impressive rebound over the course of the last couple of days. When we look at, for example, the NASDAQ, well, we're presented with a pretty similar condition. It has also rallied really quite impressively, but hasn't quite been able to hold on to all of the advance. Now, it has done better, and it is being led higher by the extremely large cap companies. What was also particularly interesting, I think, in here today is that the FANG index was able to push on to new recovery highs, and it did hold on to the majority of its advance. But then it's some of the companies that have been selling off most aggressively were among the biggest leaders in here today. So Take-Two Interactive has had its first clear upward dynamic in quite some time, and it really does have quite a large oversold condition. Now, obviously, there has been a very clear loss of uptrend consistency in this share. It's unlikely to become the next leader in terms of stock market performance, but the fact that it is now starting to demonstrate some support, starting to come back in, well, what that is suggestive of is at least some risk tolerance to start coming in on what are potentially bargains. Activision Blizzard was up about 2% in here today, but it is way oversold on the downside. And this has been a massive markdown for a company that really didn't have a bad earnings quarter, but rather that they don't have a big game coming out this year. What I find interesting from talking to my daughter, who is an avid gamer, is that people are starting to flow back towards Minecraft, and that was the big sensational indie hit back in 2015 through 2016. Microsoft is on the cusp of pushing on to new high ground, and its adoption of the subscription business model back in 2013 and well, really implemented in 2016 was a transformational event for the share. That subscription business model has been the making of this bull market. It's probably also going to be the undoing of this bull market because every company is now adopting it. But there is the world of difference between implementing a subscription business model or a utility-based business model for services and products that are essential to modern living and those that aren't. I think a lot of people would argue that music is essential to people's lives. And it's interesting that Spotify is suing Apple for its anti-competitive nature in protecting its iTunes and Apple Music franchises. The share was not quite able to hold all of its advance in here today, and it is now right in the region of the trend mean. Of the big technology companies, Apple is probably the one that is most likely to experience a lengthy period of ranging and consolidation. Then Amazon is now back at the upper side of its range. This period of to and fro trading in a very narrow band, only $100 on a $1,700 share, this is uncharacteristic of what we've come to expect from Apple over the last 7 or 8 months. But if we go back and look at the period from the lows in March of last year, it wasn't at all unusual to see ranges that were somewhat larger than $100, but not really much more than that. The signal here is that Amazon investors are relatively comfortable to hold on when you have a $100 reaction, give or take. The big question is, in which way is this going to break? Because the way in which Amazon breaks, if it's on the upside, then it is going to be, I think, really quite impressive in terms of stock market confidence, and more importantly, confidence in both the US and global economies. But if it breaks on the downside, well, then that is going to sap confidence in, I think, a rather dynamic way. And the VIX index, having popped on the upside last week, has come all the way back down now, and it is at 13.5, which it was a new reaction low in here today. I also think that we're going to get some to and fro in terms of trading in the VIX. I think it's unlikely we're going to see the measure go all the way back down to 10 in the short term. I think it's much more likely we're going to get a little bit of backwards and forwards trading. Then when we look at the small caps, they have not been able to rally nearly as well as the large caps. And this is a somewhat deeper, I think, process of consolidation that we're seeing here. That also helps to highlight some of the lingering questions about growth. We're really not going to, I think, get to a period where investors are really returning to a sanguine way of thinking about the market until we have clear evidence of a return to demand dominance, but also that economic figures start to improve. The bond market is certainly pricing in that there aren't going to be any additional rate hikes. And that was a dynamic move that we had yesterday. It was relatively steady in here today. But the reality is that when we look at this chart, it's not looking particularly bullish. That we've had a significant pullback. It is trading below the trend mean. The trend mean is turning, or is now pointing downwards. And the most recent dynamic was on the downside. So that is, I think, suggesting the bond market is really not thinking there's going to be any rate hikes, but rather the opposite, in fact. That is probably going to call into question just how much further the Federal Reserve can persist in reducing the size of its balance sheet. One thing that they have been clear is to say that they're willing to pause in terms of raising interest rates, but they're still holding to their schedule of reducing the size of the balance sheet. One thing that I find particularly interesting is that the only other, something I've been mentioning I think quite often in the longer term videos, is that the only other central bank that has any experience of withdrawing in excess of $1 trillion from circulation is the ECB. And that caused a deflationary spiral in the Eurozone. And the net result was that they had to, having taken out $1 trillion, they had to put back in $2.5 trillion to just bring the economy back to level. So there is the realistic possibility that there is potentially additional monetary stimulus in the USA's future. I think that has to be, I think, something that is worth considering. Now, I saw this graphic in here today, and it plots when you take the shadow banking system and you add it to the interest rate hikes, what I found really, I think, something that I've been pondering all day has been the fact that the process of raising interest rates trended higher in every expansion, and then you had a recession, and then they started raising interest rates again, and every time they started raising interest rates again, you had a new high. And that ended in the period in the early 1980s. Then we had every time they raised interest rates all the way through until the early 2000s, they didn't raise them quite as much as they did before. And now, subsequently, they're raising them more again. Well, what that really starts to suggest is that when we think about the potential for bond yields to rise, it may not potentially happen until after the next recession. Because if this trend, this very long-term cycle persists, then the next time they start to raise interest rates after the next recession, it will probably be in excess of 600 basis points of tightening. That would be very similar to the kind of conditions that we saw in the 1960s and through to the 1970s. The one thing that we certainly know is that the interest rate cycle can be extraordinarily long-term in duration. And it would be, I think, unwise to think that when interest rates do eventually start to increase again, and when yields do start to trend higher, that we're going to get back to 16% in the space of a couple of years. It may take decades to get to that particular point again, because there will be ebb and flow in terms of any secular move. And right now, it is looking like we could potentially be moving back down towards the lower side of this range. What central banks are doing internationally is that they are now starting to reduce rates, that there is an increasingly large quantity of government bonds are in negative territory. We can see that really easily when we look at, for example, the German yield curve. Everything out to 9 years has got a negative yield. When we look at France, it's everything out to about 6 years. Even Italy, it's everything out to about 6 months, is still at a negative yield. Generally speaking, if you take the Eurozone as a whole, then it's out to 9 years. That'll tell us just how large a proportion of government debt is outstanding with regard to Germany. It's just the relative size of that economy. Well, when we look at the outlook for Europe, then it is looking really quite unlikely that they're going to be raising interest rates anytime soon. The German Bund was down in a dynamic manner, or the yield was down in a dynamic manner yesterday. It was pretty unchanged in here today. The euro was in positive territory in here today. It is now back up towards this 113 area. Well, if the consistency of the decline over the last 3 months is going to hold, it is going to fall tomorrow. That's certainly a potential outcome. The pound was up in a dynamic manner in here today. The no-deal Brexit is now off the table. So now the question is, what next? Well, the market is taking this as a clear signal that we are going to see the UK remain closer to the EU than many people had anticipated. The question, of course, is what is the Bank of England going to do? Philip Hammond has been holding money in reserve in the eventuality that the UK would need additional stimulus if there was a hard Brexit. Gilt yields are down to 1.19%. And there was some firming in the yield in here today. I think the Bank of England really would like to raise interest rates again, but in such a competitive international environment, it is probably going to be rather difficult for them to do that. Then if the Brexit question can be put to the side, well, that is going to afford the UK government greater leeway to introduce fiscal stimulus. That is likely to be positive for the economy. When we look at the FTSE 250, which is generally considered to be representative of the UK economy, it is starting to steady from the region of the trend mean. So that is a potentially bullish outcome for this epic scenario that's been unfolding. Well, the other, I think, question then is if the Bank of England cannot raise interest rates and the government will be encouraged to promote a fiscal stimulus, not least to try and heal the rift in society that this whole Brexit ordeal has created. Well, then that is potentially going to be inflationary for the UK. But if they can't raise interest rates, well, then that should be positive for gold. The question, though, is, can gold rally if the pound is rallying? Well, probably not in the short term. And gold prices were up in well, were up in early trading, but were not quite able to hold it. Now, if we think about the potential for the gold price in pounds, maybe it might be easier just to put the currency ticker in. We can see that the price is right in the region of the trend mean, around £983. If we do get the pound starting to strengthen further against the US dollar, and I think that there is the potential for that outcome, well, then we could see the price coming down somewhat. But it is rather difficult to envisage a scenario where the UK wants a strong currency. In order to really bolster the economy, they're going to need a weaker currency. And what that suggests is that in the event that we do get a short covering rally and additional upside, then, and I do think there is certainly scope for a re-rating of the pound, well, then the question is it really potentially possible that it is going to rally beyond 140? If it gets up to 140, it's going to look really quite overextended. Then we could have a good deal of ranging between perhaps 140 and 150. Then I don't think there's anybody who's got much tolerance for the pound stronger than 150 in Whitehall. So we could probably see some action to retard the advance of the currency after that. But this is a significant breakout in here today, or at least this week. And now there is scope here for additional upside, and a 7 to 8 dollar, excuse me, cent move in a big currency like this is a substantial move. Now, when we look at what's going on in the international markets, the Nifty index is pushing on to new high ground. Modi is improving in the polls, and there is certainly a much more social media oriented drive to get out young voters in India. There's going to be upwards of 20 million people voting for the first time, and these are obviously going to be those that the BJP are targeting, with another promise for lots of new jobs. They didn't quite deliver on all those new jobs last time out, but this is being viewed as positive by stock markets. And when we look at the banking sector, it is at a new high. I think this is in fact a new all-time high, and that's a really very significant rally. When we consider that there was a great deal of stress in the Indian banking sector just in the last 6 months, that this rebound is now taking Yes Bank, for example, back up towards the region of the trend mean. When we look at, for example, Dewan Housing Finance, that was one of the housing finance companies that led the decline. It is the epicenter of risk, and therefore is probably not the one that is going to lead us up and out of this scenario. But if we are seeing these banks starting to do better, that's generally positive for credit creation. Axis Bank has been leading on the upside, and that's a very significant breakout from what was effectively a 4-year range. the fact that Modi has put in his own appointee for the central bank governor, also is supportive of the stimulus that is going on in India right now, and that should be generally positive for the economy as long as it lasts. If Modi does in fact win an additional 5 years, majority, then that is going to be viewed as a very positive outcome for the Indian market. There have been news stories recently about the over-reporting of economic growth in China, and that's probably not considered to be new news. These kinds of fears have been circulating for about 20 years. But the much bigger point is what they are doing today, and they are engaged in fiscal and monetary stimulus. That is the reason behind the significant rebound that we've had, and in addition to the easing of fears about trade wars. We are due some consolidation, and it does appear that that's what we're getting, but this does look like a recovery scenario for the Chinese market. Then when we look at Tencent Holdings, well, the share has now not only consolidated in the region of the trend mean, but it is starting to push on again to new recovery highs. This does look like a recovery scenario, and the fact that Tencent is doing better is representative of a more sanguine attitude towards the Chinese gaming sector, and that's also positive for the global sector. Then oil prices were also in positive territory in here today. OPEC has been reducing supply, and that has resulted in a new recovery high. Upside follow-through tomorrow would complete this most recent range. If the last move is any guide, well, the move from the low of the last range to the high was in the order of about $7, which means that the next peak in oil prices will be above 70, and the subsequent range would be in the order of $6. That's what we can anticipate from the consistency of the trend. I think it's quite likely we're going to see oil prices rallying further in the short term, but a lot of new supply becomes economic at about $80. And the IEA is predicting that by 2026, there's going to be upwards of 4 million barrels additional supply coming out of the USA. That represents a significant headwind to a secular bull market in oil prices, but it doesn't mean that we can't have an additional rally in the short term. What I thought was interesting was that at the big energy conference this week in Houston, Royal Dutch Shell was burnishing its environmental credentials. The share has been pulling back for most of the last 6 months, but it does now look like we're putting in a higher reaction low. It's not so far away from the region of the trend mean, and the share is currently yielding about 6%, which is one of the higher yields around. What is also interesting is that the relative weightings of the energy sector in the USA have been deteriorating, much as the technology sector has been rising in importance. So when, for example, we look at companies like ExxonMobil that have really been out in the cold from the perspective of investors for much of the last few years, well, we've had a very impressive rally, and it is now back above the trend mean. And we're starting to see that investors are looking at the energy sector from a bargain hunter's perspective. So I think that is a potentially important development here, that one of the favorite value trades over the course of the last 18 months has been the energy sector. I think perhaps now is the time where it might in fact start to begin to perform once more, particularly if the oil price can push beyond $70. Now, when we look at what's going on in Brazil, the fact that you have a right-wing populist in power, and where there is a clear sign that there's deregulation of the economy going on, then that is being rewarded by investors. It's really a picture of contrast between the outlook for Brazil right now compared to what's going on in Venezuela. The fact that they don't have any power at the moment, that is a clear indication of just how dire the situation is. It's also representative of just how reliant the country is on one hydroelectric power station. Inevitably, this situation in Venezuela is going to be resolved eventually. That's going to create some really very attractive buying opportunities, but it's not hasn't been resolved really just yet. I think when we start to think about the global economy and the fact that we have the precious metals starting to do better, the fact that bond yields have been contracting and that the stock market is starting to look up again. Well, what this is beginning to suggest is that investors have concluded that the clear intention of both governments and central banks is to abuse fiat currencies. That is likely to aid asset price inflation. Then it's likely to depress yields, and the hedge that people will want is probably going to be in the precious metals. I think that is where the I think that's the clearest conclusion we can get from the kind of action that we're seeing in markets right now. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.